It's been nearly 200 years since French political scientist Alexis de Tocqueville traveled 7,000 miles across a very young United States. His book was called Democracy in America, and it described how all Americans had the potential to reach economic success no matter what their origins. But the American dream might feel a little outdated at this point. Political commentator and comedian John Fugelsang wanted to find out why. He has retraced de Tocqueville's journey, and what he discovered is the subject of a documentary that premieres tonight on PBS. It's called Dream On. John Fugelsang joins me now. Good morning.
Thank you, Celeste. What a pleasure to be here.
From what I understand from what you wrote about this documentary, you started looking into the American dream at a time when you had very good reason to think it was dead.
Yes, the narrative kind of dovetailed nicely. I was approached by two-time Oscar-nominated director Roger Weisberg about helping him with this film to retrace de Tocqueville's journey and doing in 2 or 3 months in a car what took de Tocqueville 9 months on horseback. At the time, I had been offered to do a primetime political comedy talk show for Al Gore's Current TV network. I'd been working on CNN, and I jumped over to Current and thought, well, this will run for years. And suddenly, in the midst of doing stories about hardworking Americans who show up one day and find their company's been sold to a foreign investor and you can apply to keep your job, maybe you'll be lucky and get to keep it, I found myself in much the same boat. So it seemed rather fortuitous that I was about to have all this free time to go on the road and make a road movie. And so it actually wound up having a nice personal edge to it. Although I will say that after our second day of shooting people, I realized I was never going to complain about a canceled TV show ever again.
Because their stories were, in some ways, shocking when you hear what people are living with and struggling through every single day in the United States. De Tocqueville, though, was coming from a very different, I mean, not only was he 200 years ago and when he was living, but he was an outsider. He was a foreigner. He was a Frenchman. And he also was trying to bring to his subject matter the detachment of a scientist. How did you approach that?
Well, de Tocqueville came to America sent on behalf of a French monarchy he despised to write a report on our prison system. And along the way, visiting our prisons, one of which was Sing Sing, which we filmed in for this documentary, along the way, traveling throughout the country, he did fall in love with this concept of upward mobility. In Democracy in America, he writes that originally in feudal Europe, the only way anyone ever rose in stature in society was if they joined the church and a poor person could become a bishop. But other than that, there was no social mobility. There was no ladder to be climbed. You had a caste system and you stayed in the station to which you were born. De Tocqueville marveled at this concept of a society where people could work hard, play by the rules, rise in society, and build a better life for their kids, knowing that their children would most likely have a higher standard of living. He said, no American is devoid of a yearning desire to rise. That's hardly unique to just Americans, but that became the backbone of what we now call the American dream. The concept of Roger's movie was to go on the road and visit all these same cities 200 years later and talk to Americans of all backgrounds about what the American dream was, what it is today, and what it still could be. We were in trailer parks. We were in rural obesity clinics in the Mississippi Delta. We were in prisons up north and down south, the worst homeless shelter in all of Detroit, the offices of billionaire Dan Gilbert in downtown Detroit. We went to colleges and spoke with experts, spoke with homeless vets, spoke with undocumented families. We were all across the country and did 200 interviews in 55 cities in 17 states.
Let's hear a little bit of a few of the interviews that you did. This is Tina McCoy. She lives in the Atlanta area. She works a fast food job for minimum wage to support both her daughter and herself. And she spends 4 hours commuting every day at a cost of $24 a day, but only earns $7.40 an hour.
What do you bring home when this is all done?
After the taxes, it's about $323 every 2 weeks.
Sure, every day and every night.
And I wanted to play one more comment from Tina McCoy here. Again, works a minimum wage job because this is when you were asking her about what the American dream means.
The American dream would be a living wage.
Is that dream alive?
No.
Think it will get better?
Well, I'm waiting on my day to come for it to get better.
What did you hear from most people, and how different were those answers according to their race, the city they were living in, and their standard of living?
Well, that's a pretty big question, and I'm glad you played Tina because she was one of the people that moved me the most on the shoot. There were two types of people. There were the ones who grew up believing in the American dream, believing in the American dream our parents and grandparents inherited. And then there were the folks who grew up knowing that that wasn't the case. And obviously, along color lines, it was rather stark, to be honest with you, as well as along economic lines. And low-income people of color and Caucasians had all grown up sort of thinking the American dream was something available to someone else. The surprising thing was how many folks who had grown up believing in it, who now recognize that for many, the middle class is the top of the bottom. And the American dream for so many has gone from prosperity to just scraping by. We spoke with multiple Caucasians in their 60s who never thought they'd be applying for SNAP benefits. But I didn't meet anyone who was cynical. I didn't meet anyone who didn't believe it. You know, the majority of Americans believe that the next generation is going to have a lower standard of living. But the majority of Americans also believe that their kids will have a higher standard of living. And that's one of the great paradoxes of the American dream. And while it may seem incongruous, it does speak to the optimism that still rests in the heart of Americans, despite what we've been through of 35 years of dramatically uneven income growth.
And yet the irony, watching this documentary, the irony really strikes you in the parallels with Alexis de Tocqueville's time. I want to play this comment from Jacob Hacker, who studies economics, healthcare reform, all those kind of things. He's the director of the Institution for Social and Policy Studies at Yale University.
To the extent that the wealthy are more influential and they're growing more distant from the rest of Americans, they're less and less concerned about the problems that middle-class Americans face. So to me, that's the fundamental issue. Are we losing that sense of broad-based civic togetherness that really sustained the American dream in the mid-20th century?
And this was ironic to me because this is the exact thing, this distance and this lack of empathy for people with lower incomes that caused a problem in France. I mean, it harkened back to a certain extent to let them eat cake.
Exactly right. I mean, at some point, your gated community won't have high enough walls to keep the rest of your country out. And even for myself, I was someone who thought myself very compassionate, full of empathy. My parents were both big social justice Catholics. My mom had been a nun who worked as a nurse with lepers in Malawi. My father had been a Franciscan brother who taught history and worshipped Gandhi and Jesus and Dr. King and Dorothy Day. And I had just finished doing a public affairs TV show where I focused heavily during the last presidential campaign on the issues of hardworking Americans. Empathy's not enough. Awareness is something that's always available to us. And for me, I wanted to get out of a TV studio and be a part of a project like this that actually went into the homes of people in America, the kind of folks that media types, even the well-intentioned ones, talk about with ever actually understanding. And Jacob Hacker was right. He was one of the many experts we talked to. And along the way, we interviewed everyone, Celeste, for this film, from Paul Krugman and Joseph Stiglitz to Mike Huckabee and Barbara Ehrenreich, Neil Ferguson up at Harvard. We thought we were going to be making a 10-hour documentary, and then along the way, PBS decided it was going to be a 90-minute feature. To their credit, they're putting tons of extra footage on the website for PBS. And I really fought with my director saying, you've got to keep Mike Huckabee and Paul Krugman in the film. But Roger was adamant about losing the celebrities and the experts and just telling more stories from real Americans. And I'm so glad it's a conflict I lost, because these are the stories that people need to hear. And I'm proud to be a part of a film that I can honestly say I wish most of our Congress and legislators would see, because it's one thing for struggling Americans to be colors on a chart and numbers on a page, but the actual stories are what really cut to the heart of our common humanity. And I think that for me, I could never give the subjects of this film what they gave me.
So let's hear one more voice. This is Carrie Dickinson, who works 35 hours a week at a laundromat in Rhode Island.
Right now, I'm lucky if I earn $1,000 a month.
Yeah, I don't even bring home $1,000 a month.
And what's your rent?
$1,100 a month.
It is a struggle day to day. It's very hard trying to figure out how you're going to do it. What bill is going to suffer just a little bit to make sure we have what we need.
So what did you come away with, having gone into this thinking, you know, maybe the American dream is dimmed? Where did you end up
that? Well, you know, this film made me more patriotic than ever, but not because of history or political ideology or symbols. It made me more patriotic because it deepened my love of the people and the land, and it deepened my love of the struggle of Americans. And again, the thing I took away with the most is that the American dream is the Russian dream, the Iranian dream, the Mexican dream, the South American dream, the European dream, the human dream. We all share that yearning desire to rise. And along the way, you know, Roger said, the film's getting kind of depressing. I'm like, oh, you think? Mass incarceration and obesity and food stamps? And he asked me if I could do a stand-up set riffing about some of the topics in the film. And I couldn't do it. I couldn't find a way to make it funny. So I really dug in, and I wound up writing a 90-minute, more of a solo show than a stand-up set, where I told the story of the making of the film and then worked all the funny into the narrative and crafted around my experience of losing a job. And we shot that in New York a year after we wrapped production, and they sort of Seinfelded it through the movie to bring some levity to it, which I did appreciate. So you sort of jump back and forth from this comedian riffing on these topics in a New York nightclub to then actually being in Alabama, being in Mississippi, being in prisons in Florida, and being in Sing Sing itself, where they have their college education program. It sort of highlights the fact that this is really a fish out of water movie for me, and it was something that it's changed me forever. And the fundamental question I walked away with, and we're very careful in the film, and Roger was very careful to try to avoid being too ideological politically, because we both believe that both parties deserve a lot of blame for this. And if government policies were able to help build a thriving middle class in the 1950s, President Eisenhower did things that worked, and we know they worked. And if we had the will, we could do them again. And both parties have contributed to this 35 years of dramatically uneven income growth. But at the end of the day, it comes back to aristocracy. And will the 0.01%, will the most powerful people of our society, they'll have a choice to make. Do they want to take a bigger piece of a shrinking pie? Or would they take a smaller piece of an expanding pie? Because we know we can help our fellow Americans. We just don't know if we have the will yet, and it may have to get a lot worse before it gets better.
Political commentator and comedian John Fugelsang, he wrote and stars in the new PBS documentary Dream On. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I'm really grateful. We had great experiences filming in Atlanta, and I'm really honored to join you on your show.
Dream On airs tonight at 10 on GPB TV.